I covered you back when you were in the government, and when I was reading this book, I was actually remembering pieces of. But one of my favorite parts of this book is you had Ollie North's old office.
Yes.
And you don't you're not high on his interior design work.
Well, no, it was in one sense the high point of my office space experience, and on the other hand, of a sober reminder. So I was in the old executive office building. It was
one of the best buildings in town.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. A wonderful building, and I had an absolutely amazing view looking across the Potomac and could see the Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial. But I was always reminded of a little bit of hubris. Ollie North had taken what had been, 18-foot ceilings, and somehow, apparently against actually federal building regulations, had installed a set of, it essentially divided the offices into two, and so put in a sort of a warren of plywood offices above mine. So instead of an 18-foot ceiling, I had a 9-foot or a 10-foot ceiling.
But still one of the best views in town, you write.
I had one of the best views. Now, I'm not going to get into a comparison with other people who were probably saying, I've got a better view. But it was a wonderful view. But at the same time, I was thinking, gee, you know, obviously this is a little reminder of be a little humble in your office as well. Don't go around and think that you're God at the same time.
Well, and what you write about cybersecurity, that's something that will keep you humble, because this has been an issue that you've been focused on for more than 20 years now. Why? I mean, it seems, and I always hear folks sort of frustrated, why isn't the internet just more secure? And part of this goes back it just wasn't when people were creating it, it wasn't high on their minds.
Well, you know, let's start at the beginning. Let's remember that the internet was created decades ago, and our current internet is simply based on a set of software protocols, the so-called TCP/IP protocols. And when these were designed, they were designed in order to connect a small group of researchers and eventually supposedly to have defense uses in the event of nuclear or other sorts of attack. But it was designed for a trusted community of users. And I've talked to people, Dave Farber being one of them, who were involved in the original design, and what Dave says, for example, is, gee, you know, it wasn't that we weren't concerned about issues like security and attribution and reliability. It was just that we were so concerned about making the thing work that we didn't have time to deal with all of these other attributes, and we never thought that the internet was going to transmogrify itself into this worldwide network where it's not just critical applications that are being used or a research community of trusted people, but it's basically everybody. So we've now moved into this world where, for economics and convenience and the like, we not only have the internet as a place for social interaction and day-to-day commercial transactions, but increasingly, in fact, almost absolutely at this point, many of our critical infrastructures, our defense networks, our economic structure all operates on a network that was never designed to be either secure or to be actually reliable. I mean, we make assumptions about its reliability, but it was never designed that way. And this is a fundamental problem. I mean, we're building our economic and national security infrastructure off of a set of technological protocols that were designed essentially to operate in a commune, not in a world where everybody can come onto that.
Yeah.
And that creates problems. I have just written my book, Creeping Failure. I use that title because I think that describes the sort of frustration that many people, myself, have in looking at the situation with internet security. You know, we haven't had a crisis, so to speak, in terms of the internet, But in the years that I've worked in the internet, I mean, let's look at what's happened. I mean, 10 or 15 years ago, if you said, well, what's a security threat, you'd be hard-pressed to find some teenage hackers. And today, what do we have? We have Stuxnet, which is a state-sponsored destructive cyber attack. We have major espionage incidents. We have a cyber underworld that puts prohibition to shame in terms of its the amount of criminal dollars that are involved. I mean, this is a situation which has, year after year, our security has continued to deteriorate, but it hasn't yet generated a crisis. And so that's a creeping failure. I mean, we're failing as a nation, and I think as a community of Western nations, in addressing the security, the problems of the security of the Internet.
And part of what you write about is, in so many ways, being the leader has great parts to it, but it also has real responsibilities. And the U.S. Almost in many ways defines the Internet, shapes what's done elsewhere, all those kinds of things. And you ask the question, so are we doing all that we need to do to secure the Internet? And in many ways, you don't have to read much between the lines to say probably not.
Oh, absolutely. I believe that what we are dealing with today is a real failure of U.S. policy leadership to secure the Internet. 12 years ago or so, when it was President Clinton had first declared a national objective to make critical infrastructures, and particularly the Internet, secure, I mean, we started out with a framework that was a start. And it basically said, we're going to work in partnership with the private sector on a voluntary basis. We're going to invest in R&D. We are going to do what we can to make federal networks secure. And that's a framework that I think was applicable for the time, given the scope of the challenges that we were facing, and it was a good start. I think the challenge is that we face now is we haven't really progressed any further than that. I mean, we still have the notion that somehow that security is essentially a matter of putting up window bars on your systems, or putting more secure locks around your systems, or it's essentially a matter of saying, I use the analogy of the Internet is now, it's like a city. The city, and the Internet is a wonderful city in some sense. It's a cyber city, but it's not a modern city. You know, it's a lot, we have to start thinking of the Internet today as being a lot like what the London of Charles Dickens was like. You know, when Charles Dickens wrote about London in the 1840s, he was talking about a city that was vast, it was driven by new technologies, it was exciting, it was a place of great commercial and social opportunity. I mean, those are all the descriptors of the Internet. But it was also a city that was filled with crime. It was filled with garbage. It was a very dangerous place. It had no police force. It had no effective government, which is also what today's Internet is like. And Londoners in the 1840s and the 1850s had to deal with these problems and make a number of major physical and technological and institutional changes so that we have the modern cities that we do today, with sewage systems and with garbage disposal and with police force and with effective government. And I think that's exactly the same challenge that we face with the Internet today, that we need to deal with the institutional and technical infrastructure of the Internet, recognizing that we're dealing with essentially what a cyber city that's really the equivalent of what London was like in the 1840s. And we need to face that challenge. And I'm very critical that I don't believe the United States, as a nation, as a policy, that we have not stood up to that challenge yet.
So what should we be doing? You write a lot about, particularly in the early parts of the book, about Y2K, that set, it seems to me, a framework for working together, business, government and industry all coming together across various sectors. And then it seems to me we took all that, and all of it could have been applied to cybersecurity, but we basically said, okay, we're done with Y2K, and now we'll go back to what we were doing.
Right, and that's exactly, and I think that's exactly the unfortunate aspect. I mean, with Y2K, we had, in fact, for a brief period of time, what I would regard as a truly effective set of limited, albeit, but effective measures for coordination and action between the private sector and the public sector to address a specific problem. And I think one of the most important aspects, it's not oftentimes recognized, was that there were actions taken to, in fact, encourage or incent the private sector to pay attention to this issue the Y2K issue very seriously. I mean, for example, the Securities and Exchange Commission required that public companies report to their investors publicly on what, if anything, they were doing for Y2K. Didn't say that they had to do anything. It just said, report to your shareholders. That was a tremendous incentive. It was a tremendous signal to the private sector to say, this is an important issue. And in parallel, but I think helped by this incentive, we also created a true operations center that had real representatives of the private sector working with key members of the federal and state governments and other governments from around the world to monitor the networks during the Y2K transition to ensure that there were not any problems. And I think that combination of the incentives and the institutional infrastructure that we saw with Y2K is an important step going forward. It's a model for what we can be doing. I mean, for example, right now we don't have any structure or any incentives or any way of actually knowing how much cybercrime exists or takes place. We know more about liquor store robberies today than we do about cybercrime. And how can we possibly address, if in fact, as various reports come out and talk in terms of the billions and billions of dollars of cybercrime, how can we possibly address this problem if we don't have adequate data? I mean, this sounds like a really basic issue, but simply requirements that businesses and organizations report material cybersecurity incidents to law enforcement is, I think, an important, it's a small step, but it's an example of a very significant step. And it doesn't require regulation. I mean, this could be done by the Financial Accounting Standards Board or by the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's an example. I think also we have to look at things like the quality of software. You know, software is the one product in the world right now where there are really no standards, there are no product liability standards associated with its manufacture or its production. And I understand that people always think in terms of product liability and say, oh, you know, it will reduce innovation and the like. But I think that some responsibility placed upon software producers to, in fact, ensure that their products have fewer defects is an entirely reasonable step to take, because we do know how to make better software than is currently being produced. So there's a number of steps I think that we can take in terms of looking simply at what are the core reasons that we haven't successfully addressed cybersecurity. The lack of data, the lack of better software, the lack of really incentives for network operators and organizations to take network security as seriously as they could. You know, these are steps that don't require onerous government regulation, but without the sort of incentives, we currently lack the incentives for any of these steps to take place, and instead we say, gee, you know, systems administrator, you have to, you're responsible for security, even though your software may have defects in it and have vulnerabilities in it. Gee, you're responsible, even though the network operators aren't going to take some steps to reduce the threat of attacks. I mean, we place everything on the onus of the end user. And I think we have to rethink that at this point.
And it feels like all the way through the system, we don't take it as seriously. We don't take cybersecurity as seriously as we should, from the end user all the way through the process.
Well, hence the title, Creeping Failure.
Yeah.
I think we're very good as a nation at dealing with crises. And what I've seen with cybersecurity, what I've seen with internet security is, no, we haven't had a crisis. We haven't had the cyber Pearl Harbor. We haven't had the complete network breakdown. What instead has happened is year after year, we have an ever-increasing and ever more sophisticated cyber underworld. We have the costs of identity theft and the stealing of passwords and bank information. We have increasing amounts of espionage, both economic and national security. And now we're seeing really the prospect, I think the very real prospect of what people call cyber war with Stuxnet and the like. I mean, none of this has generated the sort of the breakdown of the internet, but it's getting worse over time. And we're not, as a nation, we don't deal with issues that just get worse over time. We deal with crises. And unfortunately, we haven't seen that crisis. And hence the term creeping failure. That's what we're dealing with on the internet right now.
So this administration has put a person in charge, but I think there's a little bit of a frustration out there in the cyber world that he doesn't have nearly the authority that many people believe that he should have, and that he's not able to raise this issue to, again, highlight the real concerns out there.
I think that's an important step, is to actually have someone in the White House who has the president's ear and can in fact speak for the president and coordinate the actions of the federal government, work with the Congress and work with the private sector. I think that's a very important step, and it's something that's lacking right now. I think we have to be careful for what we wish for. Because the steps that are going to be required, however, are not just to have a more powerful White House official. It's also going to be to rethink the incentives and the responsibilities that the private sector face. As I said, I think that we have to think in terms of better mandatory reporting of cybercrime. I think we have to think in terms of some real market incentives, both in terms of federal procurement and maybe in terms of product liability for software. I think we have to think in terms of some responsibilities for network operators, for the ISPs, to take some simple actions that would reduce the ease of, let's say, distributed denial of service attacks. I mean, there are going to be some responsibilities that the private sector has to take on. So far, this has entirely been a voluntary effort on the part of the private sector. And unfortunately, and this is politically unpalatable to many, but I think the evidence of the last 10 years suggests that this voluntary public-private partnership has not worked. We need, in fact, some market incentives that have some teeth to encourage the private sector to take on some responsibilities that will benefit the nation, but may not necessarily be directly in the sort of the short-term bottom interest of every individual organization. That's the challenge that we haven't faced up to in our national strategies for cybersecurity.
We're talking to Jeffrey Hunker. He's a former National Security Council, part of the National Security Council during the Clinton administration, focusing on cybersecurity issues, and an author of the book, Creeping Failure, How We Broke the Internet and What We Can Do to Fix It. So we sort of bummed everybody out. But the end of the book, you get kind of hopeful, and you say that the creeping failure is not inevitable, and that the ultimate promise is a new internet. Talk a little bit about what is this new internet, and how can we turn things around? How can we stop the creep?
I'm very excited by the opportunity for the U.S. to take the leadership, as we did decades ago, in building a new network of networks, not to replace the existing internet, But a new network that would provide the security and the attribution and the reliability that our national defense and government functions and some of our critical infrastructures require. Let's remember that the internet is just a set of software protocols that were developed by a bunch of mostly guys decades ago. Just as we had the telephone replacing the telegraph, just as we had electricity replacing gas as a mechanism for lighting, I think we can think in terms of building a new networked infrastructure that in fact is designed for the sort of security and reliability that it's clear that we're putting onto the existing internet, but that the internet isn't designed for. There's a lot of R&D that's already underway. I'm in fact engaged in it in terms of looking at a quote unquote next generation internet or a clean slate internet. We, for the most part, have the technologies out there, or close to having the technologies out there, to actually design a new network that provides us with the security. What we lack right now is simply the political will to say we're going to build it. And what I'm proposing is simply that, as a start, that the United States lead an effort, and I'm suggesting that perhaps it's either would be through NATO or through a combination of partnership with Canada and the UK, Australia, and New Zealand, that the national defense communities of these nations jointly build out a small-scale, high-reliability, high-security network. And just as we did with the internet decades ago, as that network is established, gradually open it up to other users. First, probably other parts of governments and perhaps critical infrastructure users, and eventually to universities and the public. You know, this is exactly how the internet was built. I think today what we see is fundamentally that our current internet just provides us without the foundation that we need for many of our networked functions. So let's take, you know, just as the United States had the spirit decades ago to say we're going to build this new network, I think we have the opportunity today to just say we're going to build something not to replace the internet, but to operate in parallel with the internet for these high security, high reliability applications. I think that would benefit the users. I think the technological edge that it would provide for the U.S. High-tech community and for the U.S. overall would probably be enormous. I think it requires vision, and I've been very frustrated by the lack of vision that I've seen so far, as most people in quote-unquote policy positions talk about the future of internet security.
And it does at times seem like we're constantly plugging holes in the dike rather than looking at a broader solution for the overall problem.
Right. I mean, how long are we going to continue with just trying to patch more vulnerabilities built on top of a network that was never designed in the first place to be secure? I mean, if there's ever a recipe for ultimate frustration and eventual failure, I can't think of a better description.
But how realistic is it to build something? I mean, there's so much that's built on this network, on this platform, on this network of networks already. Is it likely that we'd be able to sort of say, okay, we need to do over?
Well, we're not talking about ripping cables out of the ground. We're talking in terms of essentially over time migrating to a new set of software protocols. So in fact, I think the cost is actually fairly limited. As routers and as personal computers and as software gets upgraded, I think the transition for particular users to a new parallel network is not in fact costly. As people buy new software, as new routers are installed, they have a life of just a few years, we can see, I think, what is essentially going to be a very low-cost transition to particular users in the government, in critical infrastructures, using a new network. It'll still be operating off the same fiber optic cables that have been laid in the ground, but it'll be using new software. I think a transition like that, done over a period of, I would imagine, 5, perhaps 7 years, is entirely feasible with the sort of the life cycle and the replacement cycle for software and for most hardware components. I don't envision this as having to rip up streets and replace massive amounts of physical infrastructure. In fact, I think it would, in the end, be relatively low cost. What it requires, however, is the commitment and the vision of the United States to lead an effort with a small number of other nations to say, we're going to do this. And so far, I haven't seen that.
Very nice. What's a main takeaway you hope people have from Creeping Failure? What do you hope is the nugget that they remember after reading this book?
What we're doing right now to secure the internet is not working, but it isn't your fault. It isn't the fault of you, the end user. It's a policy failure for us to address the underlying structure of a basically insecure internet that's being used for applications that it was never designed for.